Welcome to the Compass Church, everyone. Thinking of everybody down at South Naperville, welcome. All of you, our guests, glad you're here. Everybody at Bolingbrook, Hobson, Wheaton, I'm praying that God meets you. You know, that's what we're here for. It's not to be religious. It's not to do rituals. It's to connect with a very living and wonderful God. And I need him, and I know you do too. So I'm praying that he'll meet us. Before we get into this message and continue our series called Kings, I wanted to give a financial update. And it's good news, friends. We had a, you could say, dangerous scenario. A lot of times churches that do campaigns find that everybody gets so excited about the campaign initiative that the giving towards the ministry fund, the regular fund, plummets. Well, not so in our church. At the end of our calendar year, we are at 99% of our ministry fund. And so I thank God and thank all of you who are so devoted to Christ and his cause and demonstrated in financial ways. That is just a tremendous victory. Speaking of the capital campaign, I do want to provide an update on that as well. We have committed so far over $9.6 million towards a $10 million goal to build a new, brand new church building down in South Naperville. And we just are really excited about that. You should know that the experts tell us that these days churches are finding that the actual committed or actual giving exceeds what was committed. And if that happens for us, we're going to hit that $10 million goal. You'll also see that over $2 million has already been contributed in the last couple months. And so we are in the midst of just a great, historic season of generosity in our church. I say historic. Our church in its long history has never enjoyed generosity at this level. It's just a beautiful thing. And with this financial target, in sight, you say, well, what does that mean for groundbreaking? Well, let me tell you, next Sunday is a very important step in this process, and that is a congregational meeting. Friends, maybe you don't know this about our church, but we're congregational polity. Fancy term, meaning that we've got membership and really big decisions like should we build a brand new church. That comes about through the members voting on it. So next Sunday afternoon, it's going to be a fun afternoon, 5:15 at the Hobson campus, we invite all of our members to come. You should know that non-members are welcome to come as well. You can't vote on this matter, but this will give you a little insight into what membership looks like and maybe help you decide to become a member. But 5:15, Hobson campus, next Sunday, we're going to have our membership meeting. And then, this is kind of fun, after the meeting, we're going to have a pizza party. Friends, free pizza for everybody who's there. We're trying to figure out how much pizza to buy, so go online and RSVP just to give us a heads up so that we can make sure we've got enough pizza. And then after the pizza party, at 6:30 next Sunday, we're going to have an all-church worship night. One of the things we've done for the last couple of years is have a few times each year where we get all four campuses together for extended worship. It's really fun. It's kind of an all-star band as all of our worship leaders come together. And I'll tell you what, these worship nights have been just a blessing to my soul, and I know so honoring to God. So next Sunday afternoon, evening is going to be a lot of fun. Some of you are like, that's three things, you know, meeting, pizza, worship night. Do I have to come to all three? No, come to whichever part of those interests you. And if you just come for pizza, we'll know something about you at that point in time. Next Sunday is going to be a big day. All right, let's dive into Kings, shall we? Week three of Kings. And I want to start by just acknowledging that yesterday I did a lot of shoveling. I can still feel it in my back. I wonder if anyone else is with me. Thankfully, I've got one of these high-fangled shovels. Have you seen these? With it being as heavy as it was yesterday, it gave me some leverage to do a little better job. It was interesting. While I'm out there grunting and shoveling, a neighbor walks by. She's walking her dog, and she says to me, "Oh, Jeff, do be careful. I worry about you." She says, "You know, this is heart attack snow." I had never heard that term before, heart attack snow. But sure enough, it turns out that 100 men die every winter in the United States shoveling and having a heart attack. And when it's that heavy, you work extra hard, and it's called heart attack snow. As she said this to me, I didn't know how to take it. You know, one side of me is like, "Oh, come on, Jeff, be touched by her gesture of very sensitive concern and love." Would you have taken it that way? Or would you have been offended? You know, that's the other route, you know. It's like she's saying, "Dude, you look like a heart attack waiting to happen," you know. And wasn't sure which way to take it until she added one more statement. She says, "You know, Jeff, you're not a young man anymore." I think she just called me an old man. I'm not sure, but she's got a good point. Well, what she's pointing to is that this shoveling is a lot of strain on the heart. And as you get older, the heart tends to be compromised. You know, it doesn't matter if you had a great heart as a young person. That doesn't mean that you have a great heart as an older person. A once strong heart can get diseased, weak. And you know, the same is true spiritually. You know, the Bible talks about our heart. That is our inner being that connects with God. And sometimes a heart that was once red hot and in love with the Lord and devoted to Him, over time, as you are older as a person, maybe more significantly, older as a Christian, your heart can grow hard and cold and distant from the Lord. Friends, this digression of the heart is what we're going to talk about, because unfortunately, with our King Asa, that heart disintegration is exactly what happened. Let's take a look. We're studying in the Old Testament. We're going to be now in 2 Chronicles chapter 16. And wouldn't you know, we come across a verse that has been one of my favorite verses my whole life. I mean, I remember as a young man, I was a young man once, just adoring this verse, and I still do. You ready? Here, 2 Chronicles 16:9. It says, "The eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to Him." Do you see the dynamic in this verse? There's action. Who's moving? God's moving. And He's searching, and He's looking throughout the earth. And what is He looking for? People, men, women, students, children. What kind? Those whose hearts fully committed to God, whose hearts are just stoked with devotion to God and His cause. And I remember as a young man reading this verse, just saying, "Oh Lord, may Your searching eyes find me to be just what You're looking for." Why? Because when you find these people who are all devoted to You, what do? God says, "I will strengthen them." Which means God saying, "I will take My divine power and infuse it into their lives and into their story." And I just said, "Lord, that's what I want. I want to be one of those You find whose hearts are so devoted to the Lord." Fascinating verse, isn't that? You may want to hold on to this one because it's beautiful. But the thing I never realized back then when I first loved this verse is the context. I remember reading like just six words more. I'll put them up now. It was very confusing. "You have done a foolish thing." I'm like, "Well, what? Who's you that's done the foolish thing, and who's telling you that he's a fool? You know, what's going on here?" And then I discovered, and here's what I want to tell you, that the context is King Asa, the king we've come to study. King Asa was familiar with this dynamic of the Lord is searching for hearts committed to Him. Because at one point, King Asa was one of those that God found fully devoted to the Lord. But the sad truth is that when a prophet, the prophet who's giving him these words is by the name of Hanani. When Hanani is offering these words, it's not an encouragement here. It's telling him that God's eyes are overlooking you because you're not fully devoted in your heart to the Lord anymore. In fact, you're a fool for what you've been doing. Sad story of a guy who was once doing great spiritually, experiencing some real compromise of heart. When I say he once was doing really well spiritually, you should know that King Asa was just rocking for quite some time. You can read about it. We're going to be focusing on chapter 16, but if you look at the previous two chapters, 14 and 15, they're all about King Asa, and they're all about his glory days when he was so alive to the Lord. And it's about time. Judah needed a spiritually strong king bad. In fact, I'll put down the kings here. It was bad news. Solomon had introduced idolatry because of his foreign wives to Judah. And then his son was the first one we studied, Rehoboam. Rehoboam was a mess spiritually. Remember, he had been invited to be a loving servant leader, and he's like, no, and he was ornery. Rehoboam's son was Abijah, who we studied last week. And Abijah got it right when he sounded the silver trumpet, but I mentioned that was his one moment that was admirable and to be followed. For the most part, Abijah was spiritually a mess. But then Abijah's son is King Asa. And King Asa was just devoted to the Lord. In fact, I don't have the time to study chapters 14 and 15 with you, but I'll do a high overview. King Asa looked at the altars in Judah devoted to foreign gods. And he's like, what's with this? And he had them smashed down. He looked at the idols, the false gods all over the land. He had the idols crushed. He looked at his grandmother. Her name was Queen Makkah, and she was just very popular, the royal queen. But she was an idol worshiper and really advocated for idol worship. And he came to her and said, Grandma, I love you, but I'm deposing you from your office. You're done. He says, we can't handle this. He called all of Judah to follow the Lord and his ways with full obedience once again. Asa turned to the temple that was in disrepair and he said, guys, let's renovate the temple and make it beautiful with its original glory. And then they fired up the altar and got sacrifices going with smoke rising to the Lord and all the people worshiping in Jerusalem. This was like revival going on. He called the people and he said, let's renew our covenant to the Lord. And he did. They cried out with words of vows of devotion to the Lord. A prophet showed up then, back in chapter 14, and told King Asa, the Lord is delighted with your leadership and all that is happening here. And for decades, they were just great days, spiritually great. Financially, the nation was thriving. Military-wise, it was a time of peace, no battle. It was just sweet, sweet days under King Asa. Until chapter 16. We find in the first verse that he had been king now for 36 years. That's a long time. Maybe he became king at 20. We really don't know, I'm guessing. But if he became king at 20, and now he's been king for 36 years, maybe he's 56 years old. And he was still devoted to God, at least verbally. He would tell everybody, the Lord is my all. But we're about to see that he has some tests that reveal his heart is not as healthy, spiritually speaking, as he claims. We're going to look at actually four tests that King Asa fails at this later stage in his spiritual life. It reminds me that our physical heart is tested in four ways. I know this because I just went a couple weeks ago and had my annual physical, and they did all four of these tests of my heart. Here's what the four tests are. They test the rhythm of my heart. Remember, you know, the stethoscope, it listens to the thub-bub, and if that rhythm is right, you know the valves are working right. And then he reaches for my wrist, and he tests the heart rate, and, you know, checks to make sure it's enough beats per minute. And then blood pressure, you know, they wrap that thing with Velcro around your arm and squeeze it until it feels like it's going to fall off. And then lastly, heart levels. This is where the cholesterol levels are measured by taking a vial of my blood and sending it to the lab. All right, little confession. When they take the blood out, I don't watch. In fact, I turn my head as far as I possibly can because I hear I was going to be a doctor, going to be a surgeon, you know, and I can't even watch them take blood out of my arm. I got all woozy. I did watch a couple of years back, and when I stood up, you know, I'm walking out of the office like this, and I go, I'm going to pass out. I had to sit down in the hallway, leaning against the wall. You know, people are like, are you okay? Yeah, I just thought I'd take a rest here. But here are the four tests to check your physical heart. We're going to look at the four tests to check your spiritual heart. How are you doing with the Lord? And Asa failed them, but it'll be interesting to see how you do. It will reveal the true condition of your heart. Here we go. First one is money. How did King Asa, and how do we handle money? Look at verse 2. Asa then took the silver and gold out of the treasuries of the Lord's temple and out of his own palace as well and sent it, the money, the silver and gold, to Ben-Hadad, king of Aram. Why is he pulling all this gold and silver out of the temple and all out of his palace and paying or giving large amounts of money to this foreign king? I'll tell you why. He's buying their military support. Call it mercenaries. But King Asa in this moment is experiencing the threat of war for the first time in decades. The threat is coming from the north, the nation of Israel. Again, it's confusing because we're studying Judah to the south. Again, God's people were split. And so the northern 10 tribes called Israel are coming to attack the southern tribes called Judah, where Jerusalem was. And in this moment, an idea comes to mind. King Asa says, hey, I've got a lot of money. We've been prosperous, and I'm going to use my money to buy military service from the king of Aram. And it works. These people from Aram win the war and push Israel back north, and the threat's removed. And maybe King Asa was feeling good about himself. Until this prophet, we've already told you that these words are from the prophet Hanani, who arrives with a rebuke. What you've done is a foolish thing. He's speaking about his use of money. He goes on, you can read it, he goes on to say, King Asa, do you remember when you were a younger king? You experienced military threat in your early days as well. That time, he reminds him, it was Cush, a nation from Africa coming north. He says, back then, when you were a newer king, your instinct reflex was not to grab your money and pay somebody to win the battle, but you turned to God. In fact, he turned to God in such a beautiful prayer that I'd like to turn to it now. This is verse 11. This is back, I'm sorry, chapter 14, verse 11, King Asa's early days. Look at this prayer. Lord, there is no one like you to help the powerless. We're powerless, Lord, against the mighty. My enemy is mighty, Lord. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rely on you. King Asa knew what to do in a military crisis then. But now, going back now to the next verse. Yeah. Now he takes his silver and gold and solves the problem with money rather than turning to God. Do you know the same can happen with us? I've talked with rich Christians who reminisce with me about their early days when they were poor. and they reminisce with fond affection for those days. I've talked with relatively rich Christians who say, yeah, there was a day when my wife and I, we didn't have two nickels to rub together. We were living in this one-bedroom apartment. We were going paycheck to paycheck, crying out to God, Lord, if you don't provide, we're doomed. And do you know, every month, God met our needs, and we lived simply, and our faith flourished, and boy, he was there for us. And now, they don't say this part of it, but things are different. They've got a job that pays well. They've got money put aside in the bank, a retirement account. And where then they relied on the Lord, now they sleep well at night because of the bank account. Friends, do the test. Maybe you've got more money now than you did before, or more better job than you had before. Has there been a shift in your heart where in early days you clung to the Lord, but now you find peace in your bank account? Listen, if you find peace in your bank account, it's possible that your money is a god to you. And I'm just going to tell you, money makes a bad god. How will your money save the day when your marriage is falling apart, huh? How will money save the day when your loved one has got cancer? How will money save the day when your child is rebelling spiritually and taken off far from God? Friends, money makes a bad god. And so we need to come to a place where it says, Lord, I don't care if I've got much money or no money. I'm never going to trust in my money. You are the one I rely on. In my early days of Christian journey, until the very end, I cling not to my resources. I cling to you, God. Take a little test. Are you finding your joy, your peace, your life in money or the Lord? All right, so there's the first heart check. The second is failure. How do you respond to failure? How do you respond to money was number one, but failure, let's fill that in. So here's what happened. King Asa has been rebuked by this prophet, Hanani. And it was a public rebuke. You should know that Hanani would have entered the courtroom and stood before King Asa. Remember, King Asa had a prophet come earlier in his life with good news of commendation. And maybe he thought this guy came with good news to tell him what a great king he was. Not this time. Hanani said, you're a fool, buddy. You used to rely on the Lord, but your heart isn't fully devoted anymore. Public rebuke in front of all those in the throne room. How do you think that went over? Not so good. Let me read. First part of verse 10 says, Asa was angry with the prophet because of this. He was so enraged that he put him in prison. Oh my. Friends, Asa is just boiling. He's like, dude, how dare you come into my throne room and make me look like a fool? I can imagine Asa saying, listen, I've got a reputation to defend. I'm known as the godliest king Judah has ever had, and I am. And so for you, spiritual prophet, to come in here and tell me my heart is compromised and that I'm a fool, you know what? Get out. Take him out. Put him in jail. Do you see that defensiveness? That's a sign, further sign, that King Asa's heart is not doing well. Friends, how do you respond when people confront you about weakness or sin in your life? Tells you something about how you're doing spiritually. Let's imagine your spouse, if you're married, your spouse comes to you and says, honey, I have just been observing something that I want to bring up. Can I challenge you a little bit? You're like, how do you respond to that? Or maybe it's a friend who comes to you and just says, hey, I've been noticing something that I just want to bring to your attention. How do you respond? Maybe on the outside, you're like, all right. On the inside, you're like, you know what? Bug off. You know, I'll tell you what. When I want your opinion on how I'm doing, I'll ask for it. And I haven't asked for it, you know. If you respond with anger and defensiveness, that's a sign that your heart is not doing as well as you may have thought. Because a heart that's deeply connected to God, that's soft and alive, you know what responds to loving rebuke? That you say, you know what? Yeah, you got a challenge? Give it to me. Hey, man, I want to grow. And if you're seeing something in my life that I'm not seeing, I'm all ears. Because I know God's grace is enough to forgive me in my weakness, and His Spirit's power is enough to grow me past this weakness. And so you're blessing me. Tell me what you see. I want to hear it. See, that's a sign of a heart that's really soft. So how do you respond to your own failure and someone pointing out your failure? It's something that tells you a bit about how your heart is doing spiritually. Next, how do you respond to people? King Asa did not respond well. Verse 10 continues, at the same time, Asa brutally oppressed some of the people. Isn't that sad? Asa had been the people's king. They adored him, and he adored them. Maybe early on, you know, he viewed himself as one of them. You know, they're my peers. We're family as a nation. We're family. But he's been king for decades now, and it's getting to him. He sees himself as superior and them as inferior and irritating. And, you know, he's just grumpy and mean. He's a jerk, and he's using his power to oppress people for the first time. What's up with that? Friends, if you want to know how your heart is, look at how you treat people. I know there are some who say, no. I may treat people bad, but I love the Lord. Doesn't work that way. If you're really doing well with the Lord, if you're basking in His love, His undeserved affection is just flowing into you, the Bible says we love others because He first loved us. Our experience of His love is like love being poured into our hearts to where we're overflowing with love and it spills out on others. So to be all ornery to others and say, oh no, God and I are so close, doesn't make biblical sense. My wife will tell you that she can tell how I'm doing spiritually by how I interact with the cashier. It doesn't matter if I'm in the drive-thru at McDonald's or I'm buying a shirt at a store. Jen will tell me, Jeff, your interaction with the cashier says it all. She says, when you're doing well spiritually, you are kind. You look them in the eye. You smile. You ask them questions about their lives. You make them so glad you interacted. She said, when you're not doing well spiritually, you're a jerk. You are cranky and crabby, and you're just, it's all about the transaction. Come on, God, what do you want? Give me what I need. You know, and you're just insensitive. And she says, that tells me how you're doing spiritually. Now, I don't buy that tells her that. She thinks that, you know. And I suppose she's right. How we treat people. So I'll just ask you, how do you treat people these days? You know, when someone's really off, we'll say about them, we'll say, man, what's up with them? The point there is they're being so ornery that there's got to be more to the story. There's got to be some cause that's resulting in this treatment. And when it's a believer, you can bet that the fact they're treating people poorly speaks of the condition of their heart with God. One more, and that is trouble. Trouble. How do you respond to trouble? In the case of King Asa, it was a foot disease. Look at this. Verse 12. Asa was afflicted with a disease in his feet. Though his disease was severe, even in his illness, he did not seek help from the Lord, but only from physicians. Oh boy. I could ask everybody at all of our campuses to raise their hand if you've ever had an illness and gone to a doctor for help without ever praying about your problem. And hands will go up all over. You know, these days with medical help being as strong as it is, more strong than any past generation, It's a real temptation. And yet God's offended by it every time. God's like, wait a minute. I'm the great physician. How come you didn't even think to pray about it? God's not saying that he doesn't want us to go to the doctor. Of course, doctors are a gift from him. But he says, turn to me first, would you? King Asa in his earlier days was all about prayer, crying out to God. But here now, he's got his people, his professionals at his disposal. And he's kind of like, Lord, go help somebody who needs you. I got a good doctor here who'll take care of this. And he doesn't pray. Friends, the amount of prayer when we face trouble is a sign of how we're doing with the Lord. Those who are really tight with God, their knee-jerk reaction when trouble arrives is, let's pray about this. God, you're my hope. Here, I'll use a maybe silly analogy. When my kids were younger, I remember, we still go to movie theaters today, but when they were younger, it was especially fun because they would sometimes, we'd have a young kid sit between Jen and I. And as we watched the movie, there'd be a scary point, a jump scare. And it was always fun to watch the kid. I would monitor this to see which parent would they cling to. You know, when they would suddenly get spooked and instinctively cling to me. Oh, I loved that. That was a glory moment. Here, using the analogy, we're in the middle, and we've got the doctor on one side, and the Lord on the other. And sickness comes our way, and we cling to the doctor. And the Lord's like, what am I, chopped liver? God's like, how come you don't think about me in that way anymore? Friends, our prayerlessness in trouble is a sign that our heart needs to grow. And so, when you look at these four, money, how you react to money, do you cling to it rather than the Lord? Or failure, are you humble and receptive of someone pointing out your failure? Or people, are you loving and kind? And in trouble, are you turning to God in prayer? These are all tests, if you will, of how your heart's doing. And friends, beware, because the heart can drift in the wrong direction. And when it does, sometimes you don't even realize it, like heart disease. You know, people have like terrible hearts, you know, like 90% blockage, and they have no idea. I mean, that's a dangerous place. And when the doctor finds it and tells you your heart's a mess, you're like, why did you tell me that? I don't want to know that. No, you want to know it. Because if you know it, you can seek treatment, you know, bypass surgery in some cases. But you can do something to fix the problem. Same spiritually. If your heart is drifting from the Lord, do you want years to go by where you don't even see how far he's drifted, you're drifting from him? No, you want to know. And with self-awareness and the knowledge of your true spiritual condition, then you have the fire to do something about it. And this thing called revival can occur where you're like, you know what? I'm not with God what I once was. And that's not okay. In fact, I want to be better than I once was with the Lord. And so, God, I'm going to seek you in prayer and Bible study. I got to get in a group again and get surrounded by some people who can encourage me. I want to get involved in serving and really dive into this church life. I'm going to follow the Lord's prompting, and I want my heart to be red hot again. So that, here, let's put up verse 16:9. So when the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth, once again, I want him saying, ha, that's what I'm looking for. A heart fully committed to me. And now I'm going to strengthen you. God says, I'm going to pour my power, my guidance. I'm going to use you and make your life beautiful because I know your heart's all mine. Friends, by God's grace and through your conviction, may this drama be true of you. May he find you, not only when you're young spiritually, but may he find you today and on your deathbed. May he find your heart red hot with love and devotion to your eternal maker and king. In fact, I'd like to pray for you and me towards that end right now. Would you bow with me? Lord, first of all, thank you for the honesty in the Bible, the fact that you just told about King Asa. Yeah, it was going great for a while, but he had some real compromise in the end. You are so honest, Lord, it's refreshing. And God, we just want to say, we don't want that fall that King Asa experienced to be our story. We don't want that to be true. We want you to stoke the fire of love in our hearts so that with each passing year, we're doing better and not worse. God, may you find our hearts to be what you're looking for throughout the Compass Church. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.